Accession number 28464, Reel 2.
Ah, the leave pass is not in here. No, that's when I joined. That's the embodiment when we were called up on the 3rd of September. Yes, I have got...
John Harris, Reel 2. John, you were talking about your wedding and you were recalling what the adjutant said to you when all leave had been cancelled.
Yes, indeed I was. John Walker, Captain Walker, said, I shall give you a pass and it will read proceeding on course. And that's all it will say, and you have 72 hours. And I said to him, I hear there's military police on all the stations. He said, I've no doubt, yes. I've got to change trains at New Street Station, Birmingham. Incidentally, my grandfather, when he was an engineer, had been in charge of putting the roof on New Street Station, Birmingham. And I said, what happened if the military police ask what course I'm going on? He said, you will say that the adjutant of your regiment has told you that is a military secret. He can go to the RTO, on that rail transport officer, on New Street Station, and he can ring me, and I shall tell him where to get off. I was not apprehended, actually, and got home, and we were duly married that Saturday afternoon. My brother was to be best man. He was still in France and couldn't get back. There should have been quite a lot of people at our wedding. I dare say, I don't know, 50 or 60. And champagne had been ordered at, I think, a bottle to each five people, something like that. And all sorts of people had to cancel. I can show you my wedding photographs, but it was quite a quiet wedding. There were about 20 or 25 people in Treacle Church. Mm. There was a lot of champagne. And my brother and I had always been very friendly with the head of the transport shop on Buller's Limited, Tipton. I don't think I made it clear by the firm founded by my grandfather and Mr. Buller was called Buller's Limited, and we were very friendly with the, he was a foreman or the charge hand in charge of the, and he had hired a car and delivered it to the Red House Treacle, and I drove it to the Tintern Abbey Hotel in Gloucestershire. I remember nothing of the journey, mind you. There was no such thing, there was no driving test, there was no question of driving under the influence of alcohol, there was practically no traffic on the roads, and we had our, whatever it was, two or three nights there, and then I rejoined the County of London Yeomanry, who had moved to Clumber Park, still in Nottinghamshire, not very far from Kettering, and they immediately sent me on another course, but then I opened we must have gone back from Clumber Park, I think, into what was the name of the town, Worksop, because I opened the gas training centre there, and it was at a requisition house called Netherfield, 2 miles outside Worksop.
You were in charge of gas training?
And I was in charge of it. I was still only a corporal, but I was in charge of it.
Could you tell me something about the sort of training you would do there in as part of gas training, and who were you training?
We were training. It was War Office orders. A certain number of NCOs should be trained in anti-gas. and you had to have them trained. So a selection of them came up every Sunday morning and stayed for a week, and we just lectured them on the various gases that they might encounter and what to do when they did, what action to take. And they would then go back and, of course, pass it on to the rank and file.
Which gases were
Phosgene, I don't know, all horrible sort of things. I couldn't remember the name of them 60 years on. But I obviously knew quite a lot about it then. I may say that all sorts of things happened. As I said, a new contingent of about 20 pupils came up every Sunday morning. And Netherfields was about 2 miles out of the town where I fed. And the students there was transport usually provided, but not always. And on this, one of the early Sunday mornings, I came out of the billet of Netherfields to walk to the town where we fed in the town hall, to walk the mile and a half, 2 miles, whatever it was. And there was a lorry, one of our lorries, outside. And I said, are you going to the town? It was driven by a man called Corporal Moore. I believe he's recently died, but he survived the war. Oh yes, he said, jump in, Corporal. He was a private, a trooper, and he drove me down to the town hall, and I got out and went to have my lunch. What I didn't know was that Moore had on the back of his lorry all the arms, the rifles, of the people who had been on the course and finished that morning, who had been sent to walk to the town but were relieved of their arms. Moore went to his lunch. He wasn't in the same squadron as I was, and went in and had his lunch. And unfortunately, the orderly officer of the day came out from supervising the lunch at which Moore was enjoying, and looked in the back of this lorry where he saw 20 rifles. This was at the time when this country was expecting German parachutists and fifth columnists round every corner, particularly looking for any lorry that happened to have 20 rifles in it. All hell let loose. Mm. And the lorry officer said, who's in charge of that lorry? And Moore said, well, he was the driver. There was no one else aboard. There was a corporal, Harris. The next thing I knew was the ordnance officer came to me and said I was under arrest, having taken command of a vehicle. It was really rather unlucky. But I very nearly had to face a court-martial. There was considerable trouble. But fortunately, there was a very nice officer whom I knew well. He was a famous steeplechase jockey, the finest hurdle race jockey of his day, called Sandy Scratchley, who was to become a hero in a thing called the Long Range Desert Group, which operated in the Western Desert behind enemy lines. He was to become a hero, a lovely chap. And he stood up for me before the rather aggressive squadron leader, who was deciding what was to happen to me, and he said that I was one of the best corporals in the regiment, and this was just genuine bad luck. And in the end, the squadron leader subsided. So my military career went on, and the next thing that happened, really.
So how long were you at Worksop for?
Well, we were there. We spent a spell in Clumber Park near Kettering. You have to remember, this is the time when German invasion was expected. We had quite a lot of people, though not me personally, on the coast, on the Norfolk coast, with a rifle and about 10 rounds of ammunition, waiting for the Germans. And jumping ahead a bit, of course, The next thing that happened was Hitler's invasion and our wedding, and then what happened next? Yes, the next thing that happened to me was I got sent on another course. We had an officer in the regiment who was a relation of Anton Eden, a Major Eden, and he decided it'd be a good thing if some of the senior NCOs, sergeants, were trained in drill at Chelsea Barracks. And I was selected to go. I had to be made a sergeant. And four of us went to Chelsea Barracks.
They were all in the same regiment.
From our regiment, indeed. And that would have been at the end of April 1940. And while we were there, being trained in guards drill, what good that was to us who were going to ride in tanks or armoured cars, I don't know. But we survived it. Actually, we were rescued by Dunkirk. You remember Dunkirk of 1940, and Dunkirk was June 1940, when the British Army, having survived what was a heroic adventure, was in fact a ghastly military defeat, and all those hundreds of thousands of men were taken off Dunkirk and brought back, and we had to be sent back to the regiment. But the guards' discipline was something absolutely terrifying. Any guardsman who came back to Chelsea Barracks, having been rescued from Dunkirk, who hadn't still got his rifle, was put on a charge. Military, yes, it was unbelievable. We didn't like that. We were very glad we weren't guardsmen anyhow, and we went back to our regiment. And by this time, we were, I think I've got the thing slightly out of sequence. We were then in, we were near Kettering, in a splendid landed estate, the name of which I forget.
Have you, you'd gone back from the guards training to Kettering, to Kettering?
Yes, yes. And when we got to Kettering, tanks started to arrive. It had been decided that we would, the 4th County Down Romney, which was expected to remain an armoured car regiment, which it had been originally, although it didn't have any armoured cars, but it was to be like tanks. And we had to train very intensively, because it was quite likely that we would be sent overseas during that year. And there was intensive training in acting as a car commander, a driver, or a wireless operator, gunner, in a tank. And the tanks, there were cruiser tanks, started to arrive. And my squadron leader sent for me and he said, "Sergeant Harris, you're a problem." I said, "Why am I a problem?" So he said, "Well, you've been on all these courses and you're not really trained to command a tank." And I said, "Whose fault's that, sir?" He said, "Well, we're not arguing about that, but that's a fact of life." He said, "I'm rather concerned about you because you've done very well, and I've got an idea for you. I think you should go to Sandhurst to be trained as an officer." Now, there were scores of people in the 4th County Union who ought to have been sent to officer training unions long before this, but the commanding officer didn't want to lose all his best people, and it wasn't until the end of the Desert War when this fourth county of land in Germany, who distinguished himself in the western themselves in the western desert, a special unit which was in charge of recruiting NCOs, senior non-commissioned officers, to be trained as officers. And they said about half this regiment ought to be trained as officers. And a lot of them were, but I was one of the very first, and I only escaped, so to speak. Off I went then to Sandhurst. And I was in number 25 troop. There were about 20 of us. A few, like me, from territorial regiments. Most of them from civilian life. Mm. And we were to be trained as officers, and this was August 1940. And I was at Sandhurst from August 1940 to Christmas, when I passed out as an officer. One very exciting thing happened to me at Sandhurst, an experience that I believe I've never met anyone else who's ever had it. As cadets, what we were called, and we were trained by staff sergeants, and in particular by a very notorious regimental sergeant majors, a succession of them. And many of them were household names, and of course special training officers. And the cadets had to take on various jobs on a weekly basis. You had to be orderly sergeant, orderly corporal, and the orderly sergeant commanded the guards on the gates of from Sandhurst, which in the village, I can't remember all these names to this day, what the name, Camberley, in Surrey, was where Sandhurst was, and there were gates out of Sandhurst grounds into the main street of Camberley, and a guard had to be posted there. And once, Saturday night, I was the acting orderly sergeant. In charge of the guard, not much ever happened, except this Saturday night, when in the middle of the night there was a awful commotion outside the guard room, and I went outside to find two of the staff sergeants. I was in the armoured corps wing of Sandhurst, but there was also an infantry wing, and these were two very drunk staff sergeants from the infantry wing, and they were having an altercation with my sentry, and they said, "Your sentry is idle," a typical military expression which means nothing. And I said, "As far as I know, he's a very competent sentry and one of these staff sergeants started abusing army cadets in general, and this particular guard in particular, and most particularly the trooper who was the sentry that night. And he picked a row with me, and I was, as I say, the guard, acting guard commander, only acting the part, but I was in charge of the guard. His companion then disappeared, but this one chap got very abusive. And I have to say that he did a disgraceful thing. He said, I'll show you what I think of you cadets. And he had obviously consumed an immense amount of beer, and he abused it. He relieved himself in the entrance to the guard room, at which I issued the military command, and I'd come from a regiment, a well-trained sergeant, turn out the guard. Put him under close arrest, take off his boots. which they did. This, I think, had never been done. I don't think any cadet had ever done this. Well, the other sergeant, staff sergeant, had gone up and got the orderly officer and said that there's awful things happening down at the Yorktown Gate. So the orderly officer came down and he said, "What's going on?" And I told him. Mm. He said, "Well, this is very serious. You'd better release that staff sergeant you've got at the back of your guard room without prejudice." When the guard ended, the term of the guard ended the next morning, the sergeant of the guard had to fill in a special form. And on the back of the form, which most people had never bothered to see, was a section which said, "Prisoners under arrest." Mm. So I wrote in the name of the man who had been under arrest and what had happened. And when the regimental sergeant major of Sandhurst read that the next morning, all hell was let loose. Well, I duly went to church and I got hauled out in the middle of the service, and there was the RSM of Sandhurst, RSM Brand, standing in the middle of the patch of grass. And at one corner was my sentry, and at the other another corner was the staff sergeant, and at the other corner was me, and we were called up. What happened? Regimental Sergeant Major Brand, I remember exactly what happened. He said to me, "Now, Harris," he said, "tell me what happened." And I said, and I used the military language those days, "He pissed into the guardroom and told me what he thought of the cadets." I remember what Brand said. He said, "Harris, we do not use that horrible word. What you mean is, he urinated." I nearly burst out laughing, but I didn't. It wasn't a laughing matter. Before you could say Jack Robinson, I was before the adjutant, who was the chap in charge, a guardsman called Clues, a splendid captain. I told him what happened. He said, "Yes, Harris, I've heard the story. I am in a very difficult position. Those were infantry wings staff sergeants, one of which you put in close arrest. Nobody's ever done that before. I think what you did, and I tell you this, was admirable. But it was slightly too enthusiastic. I shall admonish you to a very modest degree, and it will be entered that I've done that, and that will satisfy honour amongst the infantry wing, but it would do you no harm, believe me." And it didn't. I passed out the only one to get an A, but as I said long ago before in this conversation, I had long ago decided I was not going to pay the soldier. And it was a fact that in the cavalry and yeomanry regiments, no officer could live on his pay. And I had decided to join the Royal Tank Corps. And I had got a tank corps, ordered a tank corps uniform. And just before the end, before I was to go to the Royal Tank Corps, within a week or two of leaving Sandhurst, the adjutant sent for me. "Harris, I hear something I'm not very pleased about concerning you." With a smile on his face, he said, "You are not going to the Royal Tank Corps." The Royal Tank Corps was formed in 1918, when the tanks were first used. The Yeomanry Regiment went back 200 years. And actually the Royal Tank Corps was quite different to the Yeomanry and the Cavalry, and it was much more, be careful what I say, but it was more up to date in its training of tanks, but it was didn't have quite the cachet. And he said, "You must go to a cavalry regiment, and I will get you into a cavalry regiment. What about the 7th Hussars?" And I said, "Sir, I'm going to soldier on my pay, and I know very well, I know that I can't go back to the County of London Yeomanry because of what it would cost me." And in the end, he said, well, I'm going to sleep on this. And he sent for them the next day, and he said, I've just remembered something. His name was Clues. There is a very famous printing family in Derbyshire, there was then and there is to this day, of the name of Clues. He said, the second Derbyshire Yeomanry are in Yorkshire. They are quite different from most yeomanry regiments. They have no highfalutin messing charges. There is a squadron there commanded by a farmer, and I have a cousin who is a major, and he knows this particular squadron. We'll look after you, and they badly need well-trained, newly created second lieutenants. So I went to Yorkshire to join the 2nd Derbyshire Yeomanry, to command four troop of its B squadron in a place unbelievably cold in the winter of 1940-41, in a village near Ripon called Kirby Malzahn.
Could I take you back a little bit, going back to Sandhurst?
Sandhurst, yes.
To find out what you were trained to do at Sandhurst.
At Sandhurst.
Yes, what the training
consisted of. Well, for instance, we were trained in tank and armoured car maintenance. We were sent to Lulworth in Dorset to fire the guns of tanks as part of the gunnery course, and we were taught the maintenance of and the use of all the weaponry of the Royal Armoured Corps. The Royal Armoured Corps was all the cavalry and yeomanry regiments, and also the Royal Tank Corps. The Royal Armoured Corps was the overriding authority of the mechanised troops of the British Army. And so when we were taught military tactics, we were taught how to drive tanks and armoured cars. We were very well taught. We were given in 4 months, I think August, September, October, November, December, 5 months, we were taught what in peacetime took several years, 3 years. Yes. And it was very, very intensive indeed. And it was very good. We were very well trained. And so I knew how to manage an armoured car. I may say that I hadn't seen an armoured car then since the days of being at Lord's Cricket Ground in 1939. And as I think I told you earlier, there were four ancient Rolls-Royce and Lanchester armoured cars which were passed round the Yeomanry Regiment when they went to their summer camps. But we actually got, in September, before we left Lord's Cricket Ground, in September 1939, we suddenly got a message to say that 6 Guy armoured cars were coming to be delivered the next day. And they duly arrived one Sunday evening in mid-September 1939. We didn't know what to do with them, but somebody said, let's put them in the underground car park at Chalk Farm near Hampstead. So the armoured cars, the 4 or 6 of them were driven up there and put in the lifts and put in the basement of the Chalk Farm garage.
Well, it must have been a pretty big lift.
Yes, and the next morning somebody said, go and get the armoured cars. And when we got there, it was found that the counterweights of the lifts were insufficient to lift the armoured cars, which were in the basement. And the nearest counterweights were in York. This is absolutely true. And a lorry had to be dispatched to York to fetch an operator to operate the lifts of the Chalk Farm multi car park. But that's jumping backwards, a big leap backwards. However, I left the armoured cars of the, now the tanks of the 4th Cavalry and Cavalry for the armoured cars of the 2nd Derbyshire Yeomanry. It was a desperate winter. Erica, my wife, joined me there, and we lived in a farmhouse which had no central heating, scarcely any heating at all. The armoured cars were froze solid, the cylinder blocks burst. One of the Dukas, the older officer, when things had been put right, was go round every armoured car at night and make sure that the radiators had been drained. However, we trained in the armoured cars at Kirby Mauser, and then come the spring, we were moved to a more civilised part of the world.